Thanks for listening to this podcast of Faith Radio Mornings from Faith Radio. Today is the day you have made. I will rejoice and be glad in it. Today is the day you have made. I will rejoice and be glad in it. And I won't worry about tomorrow. I'm trusting. Good morning, everyone, and welcome this morning to Faith Radio Mornings on the 3rd of December. I'm your host for the show, Dr. Peter Kapsner, joined in studio by Rachel Sutton and Paul Perreault, and we are here to bring some of the Christian perspective on the topics of the day as well as the news headlines, and there always is many on a Monday morning, and so we would love to cover that with some of the guests from around our country that also write and cover these things from a Christian worldview. Rachel and Paul do such a great job bringing guests like Brandon Showalter into the show here as we get started on a Monday morning. And as Brandon comes in just a moment, he writes for the Christian Post. Just a reminder that you can call the studio or you can text the studio at any time this morning as we cover some of these topics from the day. And you can do so at 877-933-2484. That's 877-933-FAITH. And with that, we'll bring Brandon Showalter into the conversation, who joins me regularly on Monday mornings to talk about all of what happened throughout the weekend and even this past week. Good morning, Brandon.
Good morning, Peter. So good to be with you again.
Yeah, I love having you on. Are you an Advent guy at all, Brandon, you growing up or in your family or anything along those lines? Obviously, this is the first full week of Advent as we get ready to celebrate the birth of our King here in about 3.5 weeks.
I am an Advent guy, especially more now. I attend an Anglican church, and I think it's so important for Christians who maybe aren't in churches that celebrate it so much to really get into the season, because Christmas isn't about the commercialized version that we tend to celebrate here in the West, but it's a season about the coming of the King. And I've grown to appreciate over the years, particularly as I have been a part of this Anglican church. But yeah, it's a liturgical season for the church that's preparing for his coming. So it's an important part of our life as believers in Jesus.
Yeah, it's interesting. I know that we bemoan so often that Christmas has become so commercialized and is more a holiday of sort of gifts, and we talk about seasons or peace or kindness and all of that. But when we spend 3.5 weeks in different routines around Advent, it almost makes those last few days before Christmas, if it's all becoming about the presents, it just sort of makes it feel awkward and odd. It's one of those ways families really can take so much of the emphasis away from the present giving.
Couldn't agree more. And I would just underscore the importance again of, I mean, Advent's penitential season. So I sort of liken it in some ways to Lent and preparing for Easter. It's a season. It's a season for us to reflect on the, you know, Mary and Joseph as they prepared to bring salvation into the world through, I mean, obviously Mary especially, because she bore him. But yeah, it's time to get our priorities straight, I think. Really lean into the Lord and see what he would say as we wait for his coming and remember it.
And that's Brandon Showalter of the Christian Post, who joins me regularly on Monday mornings to talk about some of the news headlines. And Brandon, lots to get to this morning. Oh. After a short break, we'll cover first the passing over the weekend of the 41st president of the United States, George H.W. Bush, and some of the reflections we see on that. So Brandon Showalter next. Good morning, everybody, and welcome to Faith Radio Mornings. Welcome back to Faith Radio Mornings here at about 9 minutes past the hour on the 3rd of December. And you've already heard the voice of Brandon Showalter, who's a journalist for the Christian Post and does such a great job covering so many of the news stories from around our country from a Christian perspective. You know, if you listen regularly, it's one of those go-to sites we highly recommend to get some news. Again, not the Fox News or the CNN, but really try to attack these things from much more of the eternal perspective. And Brandon, we saw the passing, obviously, of George H.W. Bush. And I found it fascinating that so many of the tributes across both sides of the aisle seemed to have genuine warmth for the man. It really was. Politics has always been a rough contact sport, but it was a different era back then than it was today.
It sure was. George H.W. Bush was president when I was just a kid. I was born during the Reagan years, and he's the first president that I actually remember growing up. And even then, I remember just what, I mean, I didn't know much about politics then, but the man was just fundamentally a decent person. I mean, and I think a lot of people really lament the lack of decency in our politics on both sides of the aisle, and I'm not both sidesing, as people say. It really is. There is an ugliness in our politics now that, as you say, it was just a different time back then. And I've been moved by is when you consider particularly this culture where we just see rampant divorce and just relationships, marriages, and families disintegrating and fall apart. He and Barbara were married for 73 years. I mean, that's just an extraordinary thing to behold. And the selflessness and the sacrifice that President, the elder Bush, exemplified, it's remarkable. And I am with many Americans who are mourning his loss today and have been since he died.
And certainly I read some of the last words that his son, George W. Bush, passed on to him
beautiful.
About just being an excellent father, right? I mean, it does speak to a man of character and integrity when that's sort of the way that you go out at the end.
Well, those were very moving words, and I was tearing up a little bit. I saw that there's a picture on Twitter of his precious dog, Sully, who was just right there by the casket draped in a flag. Sully was just parked right there. I mean, this is a very moving sight to see. And yes, those final words to his son, George W. Bush, telling him that he loved him. What a past few days it has been.
It really has. And, you know, and I think a lot of people, and understandably so, are concerned with things like legacy. And we see mm-hmm. presidents leave office and they sort of go on global speaking tours and they do philanthropic mm-hmm. work. And sometimes it's great and sometimes it feels like a money grab. But I think it's interesting the legacy left behind here was, you know, he was out of the spotlight for the remaining years outside of the office for the most part. He'd emerge sometimes to go skydiving when he was 80 years old. But
we
see, as you mentioned, the legacy left behind seems to be one of family, of devotion to his wife, mm-hmm. of a great father to his kids. And that's the kind of thing that it can exist for generations, even if it doesn't snatch all the headlines.
For sure. And what a better legacy to leave. You know, people can't, when you think about, you know, accomplishments and professional things, people really don't care. It's, did you love your family? Did you love your wife, your husband? These are the kinds of things that really matter. I mean, people, if you ask, you know, I think I saw something a few weeks ago that really struck me about that. Can you name who won the Academy Award for Best Actor and Best Actress 10 years ago? I mean, maybe if you're a historian. People don't – it's, again, talking about Advent and getting our priorities straight about, you know, welcoming King Jesus. When we think about the kind of legacy we want to leave, it's really about, did we love God and did we love our fellow man? It really is that simple.
That certainly is the fruit that can get born into the future that is part of the kingdom. That's Brandon Showalter of the Christian Post. We're just reflecting a little bit on the life of George H.W. Bush. We will throughout the morning here on Faith Radio Mornings. And Brandon, I saw another part of the headlines over the weekend here is the situation with Asia Bibi, who is the Pakistani woman who was acquitted for heresy in Pakistan. And yet at the same time, she doesn't seem to have a home yet at this point to which she can go. And there appears to be growing calls for President Trump to maybe offer asylum to Ms. Bibi. Where do we stand on this situation?
Yes, it's still very precarious. I know when we spoke about this a few weeks ago, I remember saying to you that her long nightmare appears to be over. Well,
yeah.
Little did I know. I mean, appears indeed. Pakistan is really a thorny situation. I mean, it's besieged by a lot of radicalism, and I knew it was going to be a dicey thing extracting her, and it is fraught with all kinds of international geopolitical considerations. There is a movement here, as you indicated, for Asia Bibi to be given asylum. I know that Pakistan is on the list that of countries that was banned from. You know, in the immigration ban, that was one of those countries, I believe, that was listed. But Senator Rand Paul of Kentucky and others have said, you know, Asia Bibi deserves asylum here. I think that's true. I mean, if anybody deserves it, she does. And, you know, we need to be obviously there's a lot of Christians that are persecuted for their faith, and not all of them have gotten the kind of attention that Asia Bibi has, but I certainly hope that some way or the other, either the United States or another Western country is able to give her asylum and a place to live in peace, particularly after her long ordeal of being in prison for something that is just so ridiculous. And for 8-9 years, we need to continue to lift her up, this dear sister in Christ, in prayer, because she knows what it means to suffer for Jesus. And So yes, I'm with those that are hoping and praying for her to be delivered.
Brandon, I'd be curious your thought on this too. You mentioned about Pakistan being just sort of a dicey place, and we see this movement globally, at least in some of the Western countries, increasingly so. In places like France, we're seeing a lot of protests happen, and it's sort of this anti-globalistic movement that is taking shape in a number of countries. Does this happen religiously a little bit in places like Pakistan too, where there wants to be this sort of homogenous population, and Christians may be under more attack as countries are really starting to close inward?
It's an interesting phenomenon. I mean, there does seem to be in the West any kind of I can't speak to Pakistani culture so much in terms of the homogenous nature of it, but there does seem to be a movement in the West, Western nations especially, to maintain and preserve a common culture. In elite circles here in the United States and in Western countries, that is sometimes regarded as this kind of racial or bigoted motive, but preserving one's culture, I don't believe that that is at its core necessarily rooted in animus towards other peoples. That United States, we can, it's wonderful, we can welcome people of all faiths and all religions, and yet there's a set of values that I think bind us all together. And yet, there are limits to that, and those are really being tested these days. You mentioned the protests in France. I think I've heard Adam Carrington of Hillsdale, who sometimes comes on your show, talk about these kinds of things. It's a very tenuous kind of thing. We need to have a common culture, a common language, a common set of values, but those things can be tested, and I think we're seeing in the world today that happening on a larger scale than normal.
Well, and certainly in one of the more fascinating articles you sent me relative to our time this morning had to do with places like Twitter, where there's this expectation that everybody thinks the same and has to talk the same, and that really what we have to do is have just commonality across everything, that any difference really could be seen as divisive. And so when we come back from break, Brandon, I'd love to get into that with you about the situation with feminist Megan Murphy, who spoke out against transgenderism on Twitter and was promptly and permanently suspended from that. And so I want to get your take on that next on Faith Radio Mornings. You know, Brandon, we are going to get that Pavarotti in there for you at some point this morning. We didn't lead off, but you got to feel much more at home, a little bit more at peace now hearing the great opera work that Pavarotti did, because I know you love to sing just like that.
Well, you know, it's just got to do what makes life happy. And a little Puccini and a little Pavarotti, you can't go wrong.
Well, you know, it brings up a point, actually, that places like Italy, places like France, you and I were talking before the break, that if we lose some of these differences, and what might we lose? I don't go to France or go to Italy, Brandon, to eat a cheeseburger from McDonald's. I would love some pasta. I would love some croissant. And there really is an idea that in the difference, there's an invitation there to learn and to grow and to be stretched and expanded. And if we just are all the same, and that's the invitation in our life, then when we risk losing so much of what can expand and grow us.
I think so, too. And it doesn't mean that we have to be closed off to immigrants or that we can't allow different people groups to be part of culture. But I agree that these differences are good. And I don't think it's this idea that if you want to preserve some unique aspects about your culture is wrong. I just don't agree with that. But, yeah, I'm with you, especially going to Europe and trying all those foods. Come on.
Well, in some of the places where obviously our differences can really flare up in some significant ways and understandable ways are places like Twitter. And my family and I saw Ralph Breaks the Internet last night. And what I appreciated about that movie was sort of the animated take on how crazy the jungle of the Internet really can be from sort of the inside out. And that jungle manifested itself the other day with Megan Murphy, the feminist, who was expressing her views, Brandon, and you referenced this, that men are not women. And she was just simply saying that she didn't believe in the transgender idea and ideology, and she was promptly banned by Twitter permanently for her views.
It was so insane. I got to talk with Megan a little bit, interviewing her about the experience. Yes, Megan is a radical feminist, and while I have some substantive differences with her, she's a very eloquent voice, feminist voice in Canada. You want some really great analysis of things like the sex trade, pornography, prostitution, and transgender ideology. Megan is a terrific writer. And yes, she was trying to ask questions about this ascendant transgender ideology that is all the rage in Western nations now. And she's been fighting with Twitter and Silicon Valley. And one of her tweets that she was banned from Twitter for was the simple fact men aren't women. And after just a few more sort of like that, she was always very polite and respectful, and she complained about it publicly on Twitter. They shut her down completely. And so for people who aren't in media and they don't use Twitter and they think, oh, well, it's not such a big deal. It's like, well, actually, social media is a part of our public square, and it's a very alarming, concerning thing for Silicon Valley to just determine what passes as acceptable speech. And what Megan told me, she said, you know, Brandon, they're, you know, men and, you know, people who are more conservative are allowed to say the kinds of things that I am because they would like to frame this as a left versus right issue, when in fact there are people on the political left who dissent from this ideology, and they are being shut down systematically. I know many people who don't agree. I mean, it's so wild that we even have to have this conversation that men can become women and women men. I mean, I couldn't have even imagined this 10 years ago, but here we are. And they're now shutting people down from even being able to ask questions or state basic facts. And so for what it's worth, I signed on to a petition on change.org, and there's thousands of signatures to get Megan reinstated. This matters. Free speech is for everyone, and I would encourage all your listeners to do the same. Again, even if they're not feminist or they disagree with her, free speech is for everybody.
Well, and certainly, and you referenced the signature on change, or the petition on change.org that has 5,000 signatures or more right now, Brandon, and it is in response to what you're saying. Apparently, under the new rules in Twitter, they have a policy called dead naming, which is referring to trans-identified persons by their name, referring to them by the wrong name prior to their transition, and that misgendering is considered hateful conduct and will not be tolerated. And boy, that's pretty inflammatory language, where you could have a legitimate disagreement about the merits of transgenderism, and now it's considered hateful if you even disagree.
You just can't make this stuff up. I mean, if that under that policy, they regard what's called dead naming as akin to, you know, calling a black person the N-word. That's basically what they're saying. And I would never dream of doing such a thing, but that means I could not say Bruce Jenner won the decathlon when he was an Olympic athlete. I would have to say Caitlin. I mean, this is really totalitarian. I don't say that with to be alarmist. It's really true. And I mean, it's just unbelievable what is now how our speech is being policed. And I mean, speak out while you still can. And I think, I mean, the transgender activists even sent a fake email. This is just corresponding a little bit with Megan over the weekend. They sent a fake email for an event that she's scheduled to do in January, where she was going to talk about this and how it negatively impacts women's rights. And they sent a fake email to media outlets saying that she had canceled the event at a Vancouver public library. She's based in Vancouver. It's not true at all. They're literally trying to shut down conversation and determine the bounds of discourse. And we have to challenge this. I mean, if we cannot define human beings by their most basic traits like biological sex, we undermine the entire structure of the law. And that's not an issue to just agree to disagree on. That's, frankly, existential.
Well, and certainly you use the word alarmist, Brandon, and I think where I see it is I see it in the kids in my classroom that are 18 to 22 years old, and I've watched their language shift, and I watch their anxiety levels grow in terms of what language they can or can't use and the confusion. I don't think it's alarmist to suggest that when you have policies like this in the social media circles in which so many young people are running, that it really does impact their behavior, their use of language, how they see the world.
Well, and that's just the thing. We need to have compassion for people who are genuinely confused about their bodies, and it's a very real thing. I've ministered to people at my church with gender confusion. It's real. It's torturous. You'll certainly never hear me saying derogatory things about people. But this ideology has to be confronted, and it's not compassionate to police your words and lend credence to an ideology that disrupts our very means of communication and our language. And, you know, as the inestimable historian Paul Johnson has pointed out in his book Intellectuals, which is, I highly recommend it, those, you know, totalitarians will always abuse language prior to abusing humans. Those things go together. And it's impossible to have a conversation with transgender ideologues because they are constantly trying to tell you what you can and cannot say, and it makes it impossible to have an honest discussion about it and the issues that are related to it. So Megan points out the very obvious thing that men aren't women, and suddenly she is stripped of her platform on social media, and she's harassed, and the kind of things. And I just want to say something else. There is a particularly diabolical, misogynistic spirit about this entire thing. Women bear the brunt of this. Women who dare to speak out really suffer the most. When this whole amorphous concept of gender identity wins, women lose. It is they who stand to suffer the most. And so speak out. Speak out in Megan's defense. Sign this petition and do what you can. This is not just a minor issue to just ignore. This is having hugely damaging effects on women and girls especially, but on all humanity. At the same time, have compassion for people who are suffering from confusion about their bodies. It has to be torturous. And I also say, get your kids off Tumblr and the social media stuff where they're getting into this stuff, because it's some dark, dark space out there.
Yeah, it is, Brandon. You said it so well too, in terms of we can have compassion and grace while not necessarily bowing to the ideology. And that's a tricky thing to do, but if we can get our kids off of the social media platforms, it makes it an easier conversation. Well, thanks as you do for joining us on these Monday mornings like this. So much to get to. Again, if you're listening to this morning, it's Brandon Showalter, the Christian Post, and it's just filled with great news, headlines, and topics from a Christian perspective. Brandon, have a great rest of your week ahead.
Thank you, Peter. So good to be with you always.
Take a break here on Faith Radio Mornings, and we come back after Lighten Up and some news. We'll talk with Adam Carrington of Hillsdale College, and we'll continue to reflect on the passing of George H.W. Bush. Well, Ken Davis got a chuckle out of all three of us this morning in the studio with that one. Certainly love starting the day with a bit of Lighten Up. That way, I see in the headlines that Ralph Breaks the Internet, that I referenced with Brandon Showalter, remains the top film in the United States and Canada. Coming in second was The Grinch. Creed 2 was third, and followed by the Fantastic Beasts, Crimes of Grindelwald, and then Bohemian Rhapsody. Like I said, I saw Ralph Breaks the Internet last night, and the scene with the Disney princesses is worth the price of admission. Last Friday on Faith Radio Mornings, I was joined by Dr. Gary Stratton, and he was reminding us of the importance of remembering God's love for all people during this Christmas season.
One of the things that Charles Taylor's told us that a secularized worldview has done to us is de-enchanted the world, or disenchanted the world, that we stop seeing God behind everything. We stop seeing, as you alluded to Paul earlier, that in him we live and move and have our being, that... And I do think there's something about a season like Christmas where we press into art, where we're hearing the Christmas carols, that beyond the bustle, hustle and bustle of shopping, we can actually tap into God's love for these people around us and his desire and longing to bring them into his embrace.
What I loved about that segment is Gary was taking us into the idea that this is a God-bathed world, and all around us, God lives and moves, and we have our being in him. If you want to hear that entire segment, you can go to myfaithradio.com and search for Gary Stratton, and you can hear all of what he had to say this last Friday, as well as past episodes with him. Well, I see that Dr. Adam Carrington is on the line, regular contributor to the program, and looking forward to chatting with Adam next about the life and legacy of George H.W. Bush.
Life is a journey of radical transformation. This is Jim Garlow. When you look at a tombstone, you find a birth date and a date of death connected by a tiny little dash. But it's that dash that represents the journey of one's entire life. For Christians, there's a very important change point between point A and B. It's called conversion. From there, you move into a journey of sanctification. Sanctification is both instant and progressive. It occurs over your entire life. You begin to experience victory over things, over temptations you never conquered before. Day by day, inch by inch, you become more and more like Christ. Finally, when God raises you as new creation unto eternal life, sanctification is complete, and you find perfect peace. You've reached your destination. Well, that, my friend, is life's real purpose, and as believers, it's part of our common badge. This is Jim Garlow.
Faith Radio Mornings here at about 21 minutes before the top of the hour. I'm your host, Peter Kapsner, and always delighted to be joined on the line on these Monday mornings like this from Adam Carrington, with Adam Carrington, who's from Hillsdale College, professor of political science there. Good morning, Adam.
Good morning. How are you doing today?
Well, doing pretty well. Saw Ralph Breaks the Internet last night, and it was quite a movie, I have to say. It's been a while since I've laughed out loud in a theater several times, and I was almost embarrassed by it.
Well, I'll have to take it. My daughter's not quite young enough to use as an excuse to take to take the children's films, but I'm very looking forward to when she's my excuse to actually go to things I'd want to see anyway.
It is a great use of family time, isn't it? Well, we certainly love having you on the program, Adam, and I know that this past weekend, with the marking of the passing of the president, George H.W. Bush, it's one of those moments in American history that, you know, there's so much that happens in the news headlines. There's so many different things that we feel like we have to attend to, but this is the kind of moment that really transcends the normal news cycle.
Yes, and hopefully for good, and I think so far for good, in that when a president of the United States dies, I think we've done a decent job with the last several presidents who have passed away of stopping the partisanship for a second, and that doesn't mean the partisanship doesn't matter, but and saying that the Constitution is still something that binds us together, and that therefore an officer, probably the highest office in the land that is was created by the American founders, filled by men like Washington, Jefferson, Lincoln, that when someone who has filled that office has passed away, there's a moment that we should not only remember the man, and I think he had many great qualities himself, but also remember the dignity of the office and affirm the dignity of the office that comes with it being part of our Constitution and our fabric of a country.
Well, and it was interesting to watch President Trump's reaction over the weekend. Obviously, he had what he felt was pretty significant economic news coming out of the G20 summit, and yet he tabled all of that and tabled the press conference in order to attend to and pay tribute to the passing of President Bush. Was this more of a political move that he was doing, recognizing that President Bush was such a beloved figure, or was it something that seemed to be an authentic response that most presidents have in this situation?
Well, it is a difficult thing to get into the mind of President Trump, and I'm not sure exactly what all his reasons would be, but I will say I think it was the right response, and I can't say that it was necessarily the first response he might have individually, because of course the Bush family, he in many ways ran against the Bush family and the Bush dynasty, Jeb Bush, George W. Bush's legacy. The Bush family has in turn been very critical of him, or at least cold. So I think the fact that, and I say all that to say that I think the president did the right thing, even though it might not have been personally for him the easy thing, and that he was absolutely in the right to stop and say, you know, whatever his personal differences, whatever the divide between them, this is a man who at this moment deserves to be honored, and I think that it was to his credit that he reacted that way and took the time and effort to make that sort of tribute.
Well, and certainly some of his language did mirror that of almost all world leaders, political leaders from either side of the aisle. I see his words were, "Melania and I join with a grieving nation to mourn the loss of former President George H.W. Bush. With sound judgment he led, common sense and unflappable leadership guiding our nation and a world to a peaceful and victorious conclusion of the Cold War." Again, this is in stark contrast to, so, as you referenced already, so many ways in which he talked about the Bush family. And it really does fall in line with where so many world leaders are coming from, and people that were even political opponents of President Bush.
Yes, and of course, you know, some people are getting really get annoyed, and this happened with Reagan as well, where people who criticized or were pretty nasty toward President H.W. Bush are now praising him. But I don't think that you necessarily should be too harsh on those things. That in the heat of political battle, you're thinking on one level. When a president of the United States dies, you're thinking on another level, and those can be consistent. That you did disagree with them, but that in this moment, this is the right response. And I think again that the president now going along with this and being willing to take this sort of tact. One thing I wonder too, if you want to think too crassly political, which I have to guard against doing too much, is I wonder if President Trump does see that acting in a sort of dignified presidential way actually helps in many situations. It's not the only response. He can get down and fight, but I think President Obama saw this too, that there were these moments like when you had the shooting in Arizona of the congresswoman there, Congressman Gifford and others, that those were moments where a president can really rise above, and that in that rising above can gain or reaffirm respect even among political opponents. And I think that's a useful tool of the president politically. I actually saw very, very quickly, there was an explosion in the city of West Texas while I was in graduate school just south of there. And I don't know if many people remember it. It was a big story. A lot of firemen died. And I went to a memorial for them, and it was in at Baylor University, and President Obama spoke there. And it was a great speech, whatever your political views of him. And it was a moment where he felt like the president of the United States as opposed to the leader of the Democratic Party. So I hope President Trump will continue to seize moments like this when it's appropriate.
Well, and certainly, and you referenced not being crassly political, and I think, yes, we can overdo those sorts of things. But I did see also an article written by Ari Fleischer, who is the White House press secretary for President George W. Bush, his son. And Fleischer was suggesting the idea that if Trump wants to win in 2020, he's going to have to broaden his appeal back out. That, yes, he won a lot of demographics that had been voting Democratic, including a lot of the blue-collar Midwest, and even had some pretty good voting numbers compared to past presidents in the Hispanic and in the African-American populations. But at the same time, he lost a lot of traditional Republican votes. And so Flyer's suggestion was that he needs to act more presidential, and he can really regain those votes as well.
Right. 2018 was the revenge of the suburbs that all of a sudden went Democrat. That's how Democrats picked up 40 seats, more than they've picked up since Watergate. And I think you're right that the Republican Party coalition has changed, but when you gain something, you often lose something, and it's not clear how equal the payoff is. And I think that, going forward, that might be an approach that could have some salience. I think that you've got to remember, if you're supporting President Trump, he won the three states that put him over the top. He won by about a combined 85,000 votes total out of millions. Mm. And if how much of those 80,000 can you attribute to the Hillary Clinton being a weaker candidate, other things, and not that the better economy might not make up that difference if it's still going in 2020, but I don't think he can rest on his laurels. Winning a national vote with 46% of the vote, I think that means you say this is a foundation and we need to build on it, and this could be, I think, one way that could further that.
It's Dr. Adam Carrington, who joins us on Faith Radio Mornings regularly on Monday mornings, and we're reflecting this morning on the passing of President George H.W. Bush. Adam, when we come back from break, we'd love to get into the conversation where President Bush and President Clinton sort of formed this really interesting and what seemed to be a very mutual friendship between them, as well as the legacy that President Bush leaves behind with his family and just ways in which being with integrity and character in our country. So more with Adam Carrington next on Faith Radio Mornings. Welcome back to Faith Radio Mornings here for the 3rd of December, and we're talking with Adam Carrington this morning about the life and the legacy of George H.W. Bush. And Adam, there's an interesting and what seemed to be a genuinely affectionate relationship between former President Bill Clinton and the entire Bush family, including Senior Bush. Really interesting to watch how their friendship played out in the years post-time in office.
Yes, and that's sort of curious because I do remember the 92 election a little bit, and I remember it was pretty nasty, and that in 2000 when George W. Bush was running, it was very much a battle over Bill Clinton's legacy. So it's very interesting to think about why that is, but I think part of it is if you are a living ex-president, you are in one of the most exclusive clubs in the entire world. And by that, I don't mean it so much as the exclusive privilege, but the exclusive knowledge and burden and responsibility. You have been through something almost no one else has. And I think that having borne that responsibility, having been through that kind of experience, I think is part of what created that kind of bond between them, that they were able to, I think, share afterwards and in some ways set aside some of their partisan differences, even though I don't think those went away.
Well, and it's interesting, too, because there's a sense in which back in that era that there would be these really profound public disagreements and sniping at each other, but they still enjoyed a time out together afterwards, that sort of behind the scenes crossing the aisles was not a big deal. I don't know about you, but I find it hard to believe that President Trump and George Bush Jr. are going to suddenly be really good friends post-office time. It does seem like a different era in terms of the sort of the partisanship and some of the vitriol.
Yeah, and I think there's two things to explain that. One is I think the nature of the differences between the parties has only gotten more intense or even deeper. They were always there, but I think what we're fighting over gets even more fundamental. And I think on top of that, it's the sort of new media environment and the new and the fact that the parties have become so ideologically more pure than they were before on certain questions. And I think that because of that, the idea of a common friendship that is the context for battle has become more that the other side is the enemy. And I think that's shown where sometimes foreign leaders of foreign dictatorships sometimes have comparable approval ratings among one party to the opposition of the other party. I think when you something we've talked about several times, when you look at the opposition as the equivalent of Soviet Russia or the equivalent of Nazi Germany, that leaves no place really for friendship. If you go all the way back to Aristotle, he says that politics is more than just a contractual relationship between people. It's more than just living next door to a person by happenstance. It honestly is a form of friendship when it's done right, because you can try to have justice, but if you have friendship, you have not only justice but something greater, something deeper, something that can hold you together through the trials and tribulations of the life of individuals and the life of a nation. And I think that's something that we are missing too much in our current politics.
Yeah, there was even in the midst of the stark differences, there was a commonality and a hope for a better future for the country that seemed to be something that we are drawing some dividing lines around. Now, and Adam, when I think, too, about his legacy and what he left behind, and Brandon Showalter was our first guest this morning, and he was talking about such a legacy of family, of friendship, of character. We certainly saw that he stayed devoted to his wife for 73 years, and not just devotion. There was a genuine love, it seemed to be, between the two of them. We see what his son had to say to him in some of those final words. And think about what the legacy is. I know some presidents go out on speaking tours, and the Obamas are on track to maybe make $1 billion by the end of all of this, and he just left a very different kind of legacy behind.
Right, and I think that his whole life was defined by service. He served in so many capacities his country. By all accounts, as you said, he was a man deeply devoted to his wife, his family, I can't imagine Barbara Bush demanding any less, by the way.
Yeah.
quite the
True.
quite the dignified woman as well. And I think that that is an important legacy, too, that it's not just what a man or woman does in service to their community or country, but also to their family, and how one's children and one's spouse honors you or doesn't makes, I think, a huge difference in how we appraise the person as well. That's something I've always admired on the sports arena about Jack Nicklaus, who, you know, is obviously one of the greatest, if not greatest, golfers of all time, but how devoted his children are to him because in the midst of all that, he took care of them as well. So I think that is a tribute to the president, and not an easy one when you commit your life to public service. That takes an effort that I can't imagine to be able to be there for your family and be there for your country in the ways that both demand so much at that kind of time.
No, it's well said. I think it's just interesting that so many of us are busy trying to make a name for ourselves relative to legacy, that we don't want to be forgotten and we need to go out and do all of these things as opposed to a quiet life of servitude and what that ends up leaving behind.
Yes, and I think that President Bush really, as much as anyone who reaches the presidency, seemed in it because he felt it was his duty to do so, that his running of the CIA, his being a fighter pilot in World War II, up to being vice president and president, really came out of a duty to serve. And I think that that is, again, a tribute to his generation. He still comes out of the World War II generation that dealt with the Great Depression, which then turns into the World War II, which then turns into the Cold War. And, you know, he's also notable as the first president to deal with what does the world look like after the fall of Soviet Russia. And I think that that generation that we're now losing and have almost lost to this world just needs to be continued to be remembered and celebrated for the amazing sacrifice and the amazing example of what it means to be a good citizen, a good American, and many of them good Christians. Really, that legacy that lives on beyond them, even as they're silent.
Well, Adam, thanks so much for joining us this morning with these great reflections on the life of President Bush. I sure wish I was in your class here today talking about these things for the next couple of hours.
I have three classes today, and I am very much looking forward to thinking about these things and what can they help the students think through about their own lives and about their own country.
Well, would love to be there. Thanks again for joining us, and have a great week ahead, Adam.
You too. Thank you.
Appreciate the voice of Adam Carrington giving us some perspective on the life and the legacy of George H.W. Bush and leaving behind a family, leaving behind a sense of character, a sense of goodwill, a sense of genuine affection, even for those with whom he disagreed. It's a great model for all of us as we continue to walk out life in this world.
Well, maybe one of the Bible verses you memorized was dealing with anxiety. Be anxious in nothing, but in everything by prayer and supplication, make your request known to God. What happens when your body is fighting you on that? We'll be talking with Linda Mintel shortly about that here on Faith. Again, thanks for listening to this podcast of Faith Radio Mornings. You can hear other podcasts at myfaithradio.com. Plus, remember, we are listener-supported, so your support makes Faith Radio Mornings and the other programs from Faith Radio possible. Make your gift at myfaithradio.com.